Over the course of this series, and this is the last part of this series, Soul Detox, but over the course of this series, what we have basically been talking about is how our souls get clogged up with so many things. And though we haven't specifically talked about getting all of that out, I've been trying to show you the three main areas that our souls crave. Now, this is the way that God designed us. This is hardwired in, if you will, that each one of our souls, we crave things that our souls long for, we might say, or we want. In fact, I would go as far as to say all of our wants, all of our future hopes and dreams, all of our desires, everything can be thrown into these three basic categories. We call them our soul cravings. And we've taken one each week as we have gone along, and these are the three: purpose, intimacy, and destiny. Now, we've talked about purpose and destiny over the last couple of weeks, and today we're talking about intimacy. But what I just want to remind you, because these are not standalone things. These are not, if you get one, you're doing pretty good, and you get two, you kind of got it figured out. All three of these things are kind of melded together. They kind of form everything that your soul longs for. And so when we've been looking at this, though I've tried my best to take them apart and look at them individually, it's almost impossible to do that because they overlap so much. But the interesting thing about the one that we're talking about today is it's probably the one that drives us the most, but it's the one that we talk about the least. See, and part of that is because it's okay. We're not ashamed to talk about our purpose. In fact, we'll say things like, I'm just trying to figure out my calling in life. I'm just trying to figure out my meaning, and I'm trying to figure out what God has me here for, and that's perfectly okay. And even in destiny, what we talked about last week, it's not some pie-in-the-sky thing. It's not some predetermined thing. Destiny is where you will actually wind up. In other words, your destination. We're all on paths. And our lives are a path, and that path is leading somewhere to a destination. And we can make course corrections now, as we found out last week, that help us wind up where we want to be. And it has nothing to do with intention. It has everything to do with our direction, our action, and the decisions that we make today affect tomorrow, and so on. But right in the middle of that, and I would say a large portion of that, is intimacy. It's one of those misunderstood things, in a way. But it's one of those things that maybe we don't think about a lot, or when we say intimacy, we think it's just something that we feel, and it's just kind of there, and it's not something that we can really control. But before I jump into intimacy, I need to tell you this one more time, because this is really the overarching big idea for this whole series, and it's this. Our soul cravings are only fully and finally satisfied in Jesus. Each one of those things, our purpose or meaning in life, our destiny and where we wind up and the destinations along the way, are only fully and finally satisfied in Jesus. This includes our intimacy. In fact, I would go even as far as to say this is why He came. It's a beautiful thing, a beautiful imagery that God came to us and He dwelt among us. We talked about that in our Christmas series. He wanted to be a part of us and give us a way back to Him. He tore the veil. That wasn't just symbolic, but it meant so much more than that, because He wanted us to have the ability to have intimate relationship with Him. The only place that our intimacy, our destiny, and our purpose will ever fully and finally be satisfied is in deep relationship with Him. That's the only place. But intimacy affects much more than just that. Now, I'm not sure what you think about when I say intimacy. You might think that's something reserved for marriage. You might think intimacy is just a ooey-gooey thing that you feel. You might think intimacy is a form of love, but you're not quite sure, or whatever. But this is the definition that we have for intimacy, and this is the definition that I'll be working off of the rest of the day. Intimacy is defined as close familiarity or friendship. And by friendship, that means a deep friendship. If I can clear this up, this is what this means. Intimacy is when someone knows you. I mean, really knows you, knows everything about you, or mostly everything about you, and they love you anyway. Think about that. That's what intimacy really is. That they know you, they know your dark little secrets, they know the skeletons in your past, and they love you anyway. And that's why I say there's always going to be a void there, because nobody can love you like the God that made you. He knows everything about you. He knows everything you've ever done, everything you've thought about doing, and He loves you just the same. That's why intimacy is only fully and finally satisfied in Him. But we have people in our lives that we have intimacy with, or that we can have intimacy with. And that's really what I want to talk about today. See, it's interesting to think about that when we think about intimacy, a lot of the times we think about connection. And the interesting thing about the world that we live in now, as opposed to 20 years ago, even 50 years ago, before my time, my time's only 30 years ago, but even before your time, we live in the most connected world ever. In human history, we have the ability, this is what I mean by that, we have the ability to connect with so many more people than we've ever had that ability before. Now, we see it through social media, in so many different avenues, just the fact, the phone call, you could keep up long-distance relationships. There's just a way now that we can be connected to so many other people. The interesting thing about that is the fact that we have been able to connect to more people, that the intimacy level has actually dropped. That we are more connected than ever before, and we are less connected emotionally, relationally than ever before. Divorce rate still 50% or higher. Suicide rate is on the rise and is already a top 10 of the most common ways people pass away in the United States. And it's on the rise. It's one of the main ones on the rise because people feel so alone. Intimacy has a lot to do with all of that. And the fact that people living in this super connected world feel so alone tells you that there is a problem with our intimacy. That just because we have Facebook friends or we have acquaintances and we know a lot of people, doesn't mean that they really know us and we really know them. That's where the intimacy comes from. And just to send this point home, God knew and designed us that to know and to need intimacy. See, way back in Genesis, God created the world. And something interesting happened. I almost covered all of this, but we just don't have the time. But God looked at Adam, and He gave him purpose. He said, here, go and subdue this land. I want you to name all the animals. I want you to do all this. He gave him a purpose and a meaning. He gave Adam a sense of destiny because his path was right there with God. He said, God told Adam, all I want you to do, just don't let your path go to that one tree. You have free reign other than that. You have free reign to have purpose, have meaning here. So his destiny was clearly defined. And then God said this in Genesis 2:18. Then the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. Adam had purpose. Adam had destiny. Adam even had companionship with all the other animals. But it wasn't good because he didn't have intimacy. He didn't have someone outside of God, obviously. He didn't have someone who knew him and loved him. And Adam didn't have someone that he knew and loved. God said after he created everything, this is not good that man should be alone. Now we know what happens next. God created a helpmate, a wife for Adam. And you hear this at marriage ceremonies, and that's exactly what it is, but it's more than that. It's speaking to the soul longing of intimacy. We need it. God said that we need it. And he's designed our souls in such a way that we crave this level of knowing someone and having them love us back. We need intimate relationship. Now, I want to jump into this, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I told somebody this earlier. This is one of the hardest messages it was for me to pull together. I'm not going to tell you how long I was in the office with this one, but it's one of those things that we all feel, we all deal with, we all long for, and it's so much to try to articulate what we're talking about. But I did my best with this. I come up with great help from a lot of sources, to come up with intimacy markers, things that mark intimacy. In other words, if we have these things, and I'll explain them as we go through, but if we have these things with people, we become more intimate with these people because they're getting to know us and we're getting to know them. And I'll just explain it as we go. But intimacy markers. All right, so if you'll put that first one up there. Family matters. Or family relationship. What I mean by this is when someone knows your backstory, when someone knows how your family operated behind closed doors, not just at church or at the ball field or whatever, but I mean behind closed doors, they knew they know the family dynamics of how you grew up and what it was like, the main influences in your life. When you start to share that, some people start to get to know you more. When someone knows your feelings, your common feelings, and your personal feelings, your secret feelings, the things that you hold back and you only reserve for just a select few people, maybe your deep thoughts about things and about other people and about the way people live, or whatever, but your feelings regarding so many situations, when you begin to share those things, you become more intimate with that person. When people know your fears, your insecurities, your weaknesses, the things that keep you up at night, that worry you, the things that bother you, even the things that you leave unspoken for 99% of the people you know, but just a few people know this is what really bothers you. When you start to share that, you're starting to open yourself up for intimacy. When people know your future, hopes and dreams, your desires, your plans, the things that you want to do, the things that you're planning and trying to position yourself to do, whether it be career, whether it be in your family, whether it be, hey, I want to build this house at this place in 10 years, whatever it is. When you start to share that, you're sharing intimacy. And then that I couldn't fit all of the list on one, so I had to go to another slide, but these are the rest of the intimacy markers. When people know your past, that's your highlights and your lowlights, your wins and your failures. When they know your high points and your low points. When they know your thoughts on spirituality, whatever they are. Hopefully your thoughts about God, but whatever boat you find yourself in, when you share your deep thoughts about spirituality, your worldview, and how you fit into all this, you open yourself up to share intimacy. Your physicality, now that's supposed to be reserved for marriage. What I mean by that, I'm not going to jump in on and all that, but certain aspects of that is the intimacy. And this is the interesting one, the define the relationship. I didn't really know what to call this. This was the best thing that I could come up with. But But to define the relationship, when the person that you're in the relationship with knows how intimate they are with you. Like, you have sat down and talked about how you feel about them, what you think about them, what you plan to do with them, that sharing intimacy. Now, I don't want to get bogged down in all this, but when you start to share all of these things with people, that starts to gauge how your intimacy level is with them. There's nothing wrong with any of that. I'm just trying to put some words and some handles around what you already feel. There's some words and handles around what you already are currently doing with the people in your life. Maybe you've never thought about it in these terms and stepped back and thought about it, but this is how we interact with people. This is how, you think about it, the people who know you best, you have shared most of this stuff with them. And the people you hardly know, well, you don't share all of this stuff with them. In fact, I'm not the person to originate this, so please don't hear me as saying I'm the one that figured this out. A man by the name of Robin Dunbar, in the 1990s, he's a British anthropologist, he thought about this in the way that we as humans have the capacity the capacity that we have to maintain relationships. Now, what's interesting about this, I've just told you how we deepen and widen relationships, but the interesting thing that he thought about is, he said, we only have the mental and, I believe, spiritual and soul capacity to only maintain a certain amount of relationships at one time. His number was 200. I have this up here. Plus or minus, all these are plus or minus, but let me try to explain. If you can think about you as being the center of this, we'll say, bullseye, that you're in the very center, and I would even throw, spiritually speaking, your spouse into the very center of that, where you become one flesh, and they know everything. I'm assuming they know everything there is to know about you, and you know everything there is to know about them. They check all of the intimacy markers, times 10. And then you go into what we would consider the first layer or the first sphere, and that's plus or minus 5 people. You, I want you to really think about this. You have plus or minus 5 people who check most of the intimacy markers. If they were boxes, they check most of the boxes. They know a lot about you. And they have a good influence on you, and you have a good influence on them. It might be your bestie. It might be your kids. It might be your parents. It might be a select number of a few very close confidant type, best friend type relationships. Plus or minus 5. And then in the next layer, you have plus or minus 15 people. This would be close relatives. This would be people that, you know, that you're not uncomfortable to spend Christmas or Thanksgiving with. You're not uncomfortable to go to their house and eat dinner with them. It could be friends. It could be relatives. It could be, you know, some combination of that. It might be your parents. It might be your kids. Like for me, my mom falls into this. She doesn't know everything about me, but she knows quite a bit, and I'm comfortable just to walk in her house and eat dinner. Obviously. But you have, and I really want you to think about this, you have, plus or minus, about the capacity to have 15 of those relationships. And then, as you can tell, as the layers go out, the number gets bigger, and the intimacy level drops. That's not a you thing, that's just a thing. That's just how things work. And in that layer of 50 or so people, this might be your co-workers, this might be the people you go to church with, this might be soccer moms and dads or parents that you know. But these are people that you know, and they check a couple of the intimacy markers, but overall they don't really know everything about you. You don't really know everything about them, but you know them well enough to hold good conversations with them. And then as you go out, we only have the capacity to maintain about this many relationships. This player is about 150. This might be old teammates, old classmates, distant coworkers. Like, you know their face. When you bump into them, you say hi. You might hold a very small conversation. You might tell them something. You may randomly send them a message every once in a while on Facebook or whatever. But you don't know them, and they don't really know you. And everybody else. I know this might sound harsh, or you might go, that's way too many people for me, or you might go, hey, I got 5,000 friends on Facebook. You don't. You can't keep up with that many people. You might recognize everybody else, you might recognize their face, and you might know their name, but you don't know anything about them, and they don't know anything about you. Now, I know we can all be nosy and check them out on Facebook, but we don't really know them. There's no intimacy there. Now here's, you're like, man, that's a long thing. What's the point of all that, right? You need to know that you have limited space in your influence. You have limited intimacy space. And the people that you give this level of intimacy to matters. And I don't want to focus on all the rings. I just want to focus on the 5 and the 15. There's close relationships. These are the people that you have influence on, direct influence on, and these are the people that have direct influence on you. And you need to know who they are. And you need to know what they're there for. Let me explain what I mean. Because I've come to find out that there are two kinds of people. Now, this might be harsh, but you can go to the next thing. There are givers and there are takers. There are givers and there are takers. Now, and here's the exercise that I want you to do over this week. I want you to get some quiet time, sit down, and start filling this out. Start figuring out who is my plus or minus 5. It might be 7, it might be 3, you know? But who are the people who really know me and I confide in and they confide in me and they have, you know, that I consider that person or those people? And go on out from there. And it might be illuminating to you to figure out if you can just say, oh, that person seems like all they do is they're draining me. They're a taker. Or this person, I am so thankful for this person. This person just pours into me and helps me. They're a giver. They give themselves to me. And I feel like it's a mutual thing. It's a good thing. It's an intimate type relationship. If you go back to our big idea, this is what I'm saying. We need people to know and love us. There are people who know us. There are people who know our dirty little secrets. They know a lot of things about us, but do they love us? And there are people who love us that we have pushed away, and we won't let them in, and we don't want them to know everything that we're doing. When we have it either way, we are screwing up our intimacy. We are messing with our souls. When we let takers in and we push the givers out, we wound up spiritually, morally, physically bankrupt. Because they take. And we don't have anything else to give. We need intimacy. It's more than a craving. We need it. We need people that know and love us. That they know us and they pour into us. If you'll jump down to the next thing there. I really want you to look at this. Start circling people. Giver, taker. And I'm just gonna let it hang there, but I got a point. I'll come back to it. You'll get it next thing. Here's what I found out. I really want you to pay attention to this. I'm gonna read this 3 times because this is just so true. We give more attention to the takers, and we take the givers for granted. We give more attention to the takers, and we take the givers for granted. I said I'm going to read it 3 times, so I'm going to read it again. We give more of ourselves to the takers. Why? Because they're right there wanting it. We give more attention to the takers, and we take the givers for granted. I really want you to think about this. When we have people that know and love us and they have direct influence on us, our lives are better. And when we have people that are in that very small sphere of influence who are just taking, they might know a lot about us, but they don't really love us. And I'll explain the difference in a little bit. But they don't really love us. We feel drained and we feel lost. And all of a sudden we can't see our purpose and we can't see our destiny. We have got to self-evaluate and look at our situation, especially in the sense of our intimacy, because it matters so much. It's not just something that you feel. It's much, much more than that. It matters. God designed you to need, you need, not want, you need people that know and love you. God looked at Adam and said, it's not good for this person to be alone. You need it. You're going to our next thing there. So you got to ask yourself this question. Who do you need in your crew? Now, I said crew because I'm trying to rhyme, because if you rhyme it, it just sticks better. And so I'm going to say it right. Who do you need in your crew? Who do you need in your crew? Notice I didn't say want, because the people you want in your crew are already there. Okay? The people you want in your crew, and I say crew, it's your people, your sphere of influence. The people you want there are already there. What you need to decide is, are those the people you need there? So who do you need in your crew? Now, don't think I'm just shooting from the hip here and saying something outlandish. Paul actually addressed this in 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15, 33 and 34, he said, do not be deceived, meaning we can be deceived. We could be led astray with this. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Now, every parent just said, because they know that this is true with their kids. Every parent wants their kid to hang around the right crowd of people, right? No? Amen? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. We think about that as parents. We want our kids' crew to be people they need. We want our kids' crew to be people that know and love them. But we lead ourselves astray with this. Bad company corrupts good morals. That's not saying that you're bad. It's just saying they knock you off your path. They take you away from your purpose. To use the last 2 weeks that we've talked about, they take you out of your purpose and what God has planned for you, and they lead you to different destinations that don't lead to where He wants you to be. But then I'm not saying they're inherently bad people. They're just bad for you right now. You need to know it. Verse 34 says, come to your senses. In other words, sensibly think about this thing and stop sinning. For some people are ignorant about God. I say this to your shame. And that sounds so harsh, but this is what he means. There are people who are not choosing to live the way that you do. Why are you giving them influence in your life? If you want to follow God's will for your life, why are you hanging around and why are you letting people have influence in your life over you that don't see the same thing? They're not wanting you to win. They're not wanting your relationship to be better with God. They just want what they want from you. Come to your senses. There are givers and there are takers. I know that sounds so harsh. That doesn't sound Christian to say that, but it's the truth. You need to know, why are the people that hang around you hanging around you? You know. You know. But what I'm saying is, in that first couple spheres of influence, if those people are not wanting you to win and wanting you to see and fulfill your purpose and wanting you to wind up in the good destinations that God has laid out for you, if they don't want that for you, do they really love you? No. No. Eventually it hits you. That in the paradigm of givers and takers, you cannot take love. You can't make somebody love you. You can't make somebody treat you right. You can't make somebody want you to win. You can't make somebody pat you on the back and encourage you to live a godly lifestyle. That's not how this works. You cannot take love. You have to give it. You have to. And if you find yourself as someone who, if you really look at yourself and you're like, I'm a taker, that's not how you get love. That's how you get false intimacy. That's how you get broken relationships. That's how your soul feels like it's in a jumbled mess all the time. And if you're looking at it like I'm telling you to do, and you look at people, you can tell. Do they want you to win or do they not want you to win? You're taking it. You get it. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about is possibly one of the most intimate scenes in all of Scripture. And that's and it comes from, to me, an odd place in a sense, but then I got to really think about it, and it just makes so much sense. But Jesus, at the Last Supper, or what we call the Last Supper, he's been, just to build the context, he has been with these guys for 3.5 years where he has poured his life into these guys. And you think about it, the paradigm is still there. He had about 12 disciples with him. So there's that ring. And inside those 12 disciples, he had three that he was really close to. That would be John, James, and Peter. We hear about them a lot more because they were right there all the time. And in that paradigm, Jesus has poured his life into them. He has been intimate with them. They check a lot of the markers there. They know him, and he knows them. And they've lived life together, walking around, sharing the gospel, healing people for 3.5 years. And now they're at this place. And Jesus knows what's about to happen, and he wants to share. So his last kind of things he wants to share with them, things they need to know before he goes to the cross. And this is what happens. In John 13, 4-9, it says, "So he got up from supper," that's Jesus, "laid aside his robe, took a towel, and tied it around himself," verse 5. "Next, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet." Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but I don't like nobody touching my feet. Alright? But what this meant in this culture, this was one of the lowliest and most intimate things that you could do. This is really putting yourself out there in a position. You're opening yourself up. And Jesus did it. Washed his disciples' feet and dried them with a towel tied around him in verse 6. He came to Simon Peter, who asked him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Because Peter, you know, he's the loud mouth. He's got to say something. Jesus answered him, "What I'm doing you don't understand now, but afterward you will know." You will know. You will understand. Verse 9. Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." Jesus was saying that. You've got to allow yourself to open up and let me show you, let me know you, let me love on you, let me serve you in this way, and you'll understand later. And Simon Peter said, "Okay, well, you know, bring it on. I want it." And just a few verses later, in verse 12, it says, "When Jesus had washed their feet and put on his robe, he reclined again and said to them, 'Do you know what I have done for you?'" And they're like, "Yeah, you washed your feet. Good deal." Verse 13, "You call me teacher and Lord. This is well said, for I am. I am the Lord, and I am the teacher. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." Now, don't panic. We're not fixing to break out the basins or anything. But this is what he's saying. "I have served you. I have opened myself up. I have lowered myself, humbled myself to serve and love you." Why? Because I want intimate relationship with you. That's how we're supposed to treat one another. That's the way intimate relationships are supposed to look. And you only have a limited amount of those. So who's in your crew? And are they serving you like that? Are they loving you like that? Do they care about you like that? Because if they don't, maybe you need to push them out to another layer. I'm not saying drop them altogether. But here's the thing about every relationship that you'll ever have. It's all about influence. Either you're influencing them or they're influencing you. Either you're influencing them or they're influencing you. And the hope is you're influencing them to meet your Heavenly Father, your Lord and Savior. But if they're influencing you away, maybe you need to push them and guard yourself against them just a little bit. I'm not saying drop them all together. They still need you to influence them. But if you're not strong enough right now, you don't need them influencing you. You don't need them in your close confidant level. You don't need that. Because bad company corrupts good morals. You need to be able to speak into them and not have them speak into you and influence you, knock you off your purpose and your destiny. Jesus was teaching this is how it's supposed to look. In verse 15, he says this, "For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done for you." That's what it's supposed to look like. We need people who know and love us. That's what we need. And the way that we check people, if they really know and love us, because we can have people know a lot of things about us, but they're not loving us. What's their posture towards us? And what's our posture towards them? Because the interesting thing about this, people in that first few spheres of influence, my sphere ought to look like their sphere. I'm in their sphere, and they're in my sphere. I'm influencing them, and they're influencing me. I'm speaking into their life, and they're speaking into mine. And the beauty about that is another scripture, I don't have it up there, but it says iron sharpens iron. That's what that's about. You need people to come alongside you that are moving in the same direction as you, heading towards the same destinations as you, and has the same overall purposes as you, and that is to help people grow in their relationship with Jesus Christ. You need people around you rooting for you, serving you, helping you, doing this life together with you. Your soul needs that. That's how you help cleanse all that stuff out, because there's nothing more cleansing and soul filling than serving another person. You can't take the love that you need. You can only give it.